What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
Where the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
Welcome back to the Rodcast. You can always be a part of the show. You're the most important part of the show. The way to hit us up is on the Specs text line. That's the best way to do it, 512-337-3776. You also can hit me up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers. That is also the case on the Twitterverse and on the gram for the young folks out there. You also can hit my man up, BK. He's at Brad Kellner in the Twitterverse. You can hit him up. We got a lot to talk about on the show. Congrats to Texas basketball. Big win for Texas basketball. I know every win for Texas basketball is a big win. A big win? What do you mean? They beat TCU by 1 point. Hey, big win. Because they can't afford any more losses, really. I mean, their backs are up against the wall now to try to get as squeeze out as many wins as possible. And they could lose any of their remaining games based on, you know, the product that we've seen so far. So, good for the Longhorn basketball team to get a big win. That puts them at, 3-4 now in the conference. So keep hope alive. Keep hope alive for the Texas basketball team. Their struggles in the last, 4 minutes of the game basically continue that game. You look at it, I believe in the last 4 minutes, they were outscored 3-10. In the last 4 minutes of that game, but they found a way to hold on for the win. It wasn't pretty. It was ugly, but congrats to the Longhorn basketball team. Remember when they were blown out by West Virginia? I said, when you're blown out like that, because I had experienced an embarrassing blowout on a kind of national scale, and that blowout against West Virginia was so bad, it started like trending. People started going to the game to kind of watch the Longhorns get blown out and see how bad it would get. You know, moments like that, they either define you, they either destroy you, or they fuel you, right? You know what I mean? It's going to go one of those kind of three ways for this Longhorn basketball team. LSU, they come out horrendous first half, fight back. At least you see some fight. I said, if you don't see any fight from these guys, even if they're outmatched, and LSU was a better basketball team, but if you don't see fight from the Longhorn basketball team in that game, then we know the coach has lost the team. And yes, it was an embarrassing start to the game, but they did fight. I mean, you did see fight. It wasn't necessarily efficient. They weren't necessarily effective. They didn't develop an identity. There wasn't a lot of ball movement. They didn't move the ball well. They didn't make a lot of great shots and decisions on the offensive end. And that's been the biggest criticism against Shaka Smart, especially in winning time late in the game. But at least they didn't give up like they did in the West Virginia game. TCU game, much better product in terms of the way that the players were actually executing on the floor. Yes, you got to have effort, and that's the fight. And yes, you need guys to be junkyard dogs and dive for loose balls and 50-50 balls. But also, you need to be, somewhat effective at executing the game plan and really forging an identity, which they still haven't done. But at least they hold on for the win. And it was thrilling, right? It was dramatic. I think you'll have a lot more dramatic endings, whether it's bad or good. This time, their collapse in the fourth, in the last 4 minutes of the game, I should say, it didn't come back to haunt them. Usually it does.
Yeah, damn near did, though.
Yeah, it damn near did.
Like, it took a couple of crazy circus shots.
Hey, what? Why can't that just be being clutch?
Hey, you'll take them.
You don't think that's just them being clutch?
We'll call them being clutch.
It's only clutch if you've proven before. Otherwise, it's luck.
I'm going to give credit to the basketball gods.
What? Why do the basketball gods like Texas?
I don't know if they did last night. They usually don't. They must have lied. The TCU's head coach or their team must have ticked them off or something.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. No, you're right about that.
It's a big win. It's a good win back on track. They've got Iowa State on Saturday here in Austin. You think they could get that to get back to 500? But they need to string some more quality wins together if they want to be dancing this year.
Totally agree with you. Yeah, no doubt about it. I actually did some research since the start of Big 12 play, including the LSU game, because obviously that was in that SEC challenge or whatever. The Longhorns have been outscored by 13 points in the last 4 minutes since the start of Big 12 play. It's not as much as I thought it would be. I thought it'd be worse than that. But that's where they've been losing games. That's where they've been barely winning games if you look at the TCU game last night. All right, so we'll get to more Texas basketball. We'll also talk some Longhorn football. The news yesterday that Juwan Mitchell was entering the transfer portal had mixed. There were a lot of mixed responses about it, mixed emotions about it. Some people expected it, not surprised. Some people were a little surprised. I was actually surprised that he decided to hit the transfer portal. He had 3 starts last year. It's not like there's a proven commodity at linebacker. Hell, anybody can go out there with a new regime and win that job. So I think the speculation is there were some other factors at play there, and that could easily be the case. So we'll talk a little bit about that coming up a little bit later on in the show. We'll also get to Super Bowl discussion. We'll talk about – this is my prediction on the Super Bowl, and I've said it before on the show. All the research I'm doing points me in a direction that the 49ers defense ultimately – are not going to be able to stop Patrick Mahomes and that Andy Reid offense. Ultimately, they're not going to be able to stop it. Now, can they make some plays against it, or can they force Kansas City to make 1 or 2 mistakes, or force a punt or 2 punts, a timely punt, that allow the 49ers to gain momentum in the game and keep some momentum? That, I think, is what's going to happen. It's going to be – I think you're going to have an old-fashioned shootout. I don't think either defense – I don't think the 49ers defense, in the end, even though that defensive line is going to be the key in how they use it and how Robert Saleh calls the game, I think that's going to be ultimately the biggest factors defensively for the 49ers. But, man, Matt Patrick Mahomes is such a freak of nature. I don't really see the 49ers containing him for 4 quarters. And this is a guy that all he needs is 4 or 5 drives where he goes thermonuclear and he becomes unstoppable. And we've seen that happen. I'm a Texans fan. The Texans were up 24-0. He goes thermonuclear and then it's over. You know what I mean? And the Tennessee Titans, they were up, 17-7?
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes goes off and then none of that matters. He makes he made Derrick Henry obsolete. They basically forgot about Derrick Henry because they were in such awe of what Patrick Mahomes was doing.
He's like a streaky shooter in basketball, man.
He's like Steph Curry. He's really kind of the NFL's version of Steph Curry.
When he gets hot, watch out.
If he gets hot, and that's the kind of thing. You got to keep him from getting too hot.
Yeah.
He's going to make plays, but don't let him get hot. You know what I mean? That's the thing about it. We'll talk about the few times that I've identified in his short, extraordinary career. MVP last year, first year as a starter, and a Super Bowl appearance in his second year as a starter. Guys, we might be looking at the best start for a starting quarterback in the history of the NFL. I mean, Kurt Warner's got one of those starts, but Kurt Warner's story was it's like a Disney movie. You know what I mean? He was sacking groceries, like 2 or 3 years before he was in the Super Bowl. Like, that's crazy. Stuff like that usually doesn't happen. So, number one, how they're going to stop Patrick Mahomes, and I don't know if they will be able to do it consistently. I think they can do it every quarter. They may be able to stop him once or twice. I really do think it's going to be that with 2 weeks to prepare with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, that offense is going to be that dynamic. But on the flip side, I don't think Kansas City is going to be able to stop that Shanahan running game. I've looked at it. Kansas City's defense is good, and they've been in the last 8 weeks of this season, including the playoffs, they've been one of the better defenses in the NFL, if not the best. They've been really, really good. But that Shanahan, Shano running zone blocking scheme 2.0 is on a different level. It is. Everybody in the NFL, actually everybody in football, is in awe of that running game. Everybody believes that is the best overall running game and system in football today. College or pro level.
I'm in all of it.
Everybody is. He's made running the football entertaining. We thought running the football was boring. You watch Shanahan's system and you go, what the heck? What was that? You actually got to rewind plays and go, okay, what the fullback do? What? Why did he do? Oh, that's why he did that. The tight end. Pre-snap. Post-snap. I mean, he's got so many different little gadgets all in one play. That running game is magnificent.
He's combining two things that I didn't think could possibly be combined. Right, they're running the football a ton, but they're picking up yards and points at a damn near Big 12 level.
It's unbelievable.
Like I thought, if you're just going to run it, you're trying to slow the game down and maybe get to 21, and hopefully you win with that. But they are running the football and putting up points at will.
Yeah. So I think that's, you know, on both sides. That, to me, are the two biggest questions. And I don't think they get answered. I think both of those offenses, they – and I dominate, but I think they win the day. This is the opposite of the Super Bowl last year, in my opinion. Defensive struggle. I don't think this is a defensive struggle. I think this is – it is not an old-fashioned shootout because, as BK mentioned, 49ers are running the football. But yet they get so many explosive plays, so many chunk yardage plays running the football. And then Jimmy Garoppolo opens up the play-action pass for him, and he can chunk it downfield. It seems like it is a prolific spread passing offense, just if you look at the stats alone, but it's not. But it's still really, really impressive. All right, so we'll get into that. I got lots of Super Bowl talk to talk about on the show. I didn't realize, and I don't know how often this happens, but you know, you had the Grammys last weekend. You're gonna have the Super Bowl this weekend, and then next weekend is the Oscars. Like, you know, like you're talking about, you know, three different kind of pop culture, pop culture phenomenons in America all happening right in a row. So, yeah, I got into some of this unfortunately, when we were talking about Kobe. Actually, we made some pop culture comparisons. So I have a couple of pop culture comparisons for Andy Reid, I believe for my man Shano, and then we'll get into a couple of more, just given that the Super Bowl, which is arguably the biggest pop culture event in America, is sandwiched in between two of the other biggest pop culture events in America, the Grammys and the Oscars. All right, so we'll get into that coming up a little bit later on. There is also some NBA news, bad news actually for the NBA. Their salary cap is going to go down next year because that's a projection. Their projection right now is the salary cap is going to go down this year. It's going to affect a lot of teams, and especially the trade deadline coming up. Was it February 6th? So we'll get into that. We'll talk some NBA coming up on the show too. We'll start, though. I want to start really quickly with the with the Super Bowl, and we'll get into some other topics. And of course, we'll talk a lot of different layers of the Super Bowl because, I mean, it right now, all of the information coming out about both sides, there's a lot out there to digest. But man, I think it's one of the most. I think it's one of the most even Super Bowls, period, that I've seen in a long time. I don't think there's much separation between the 49ers and the Chiefs. It's the separation between the two is only in the styles in which they decide to implement their strategy. But, man, the 49ers defensive line with all the talent they have and – five first-round draft picks on that defensive line. The ability of, you know, Patrick Mahomes to basically almost solve and be able to decipher any defense, giving him a certain amount of time, and there's no doubt he'll figure out a way, you know, to maneuver or a way to execute against any defensive strategy. That's why. No, the playbook is not, at least the blueprint is not out on Patrick Mahomes because it's not consistent enough yet to say, this is the way you beat him. And usually that's reserved for all-time great quarterbacks, right? That's reserved for, you know, Aaron Rodgers and, you know, Russell Wilson and, you know, even, you know, a young Tom Brady in his prime, an aging Tom Brady's different discussion. You know, but that was reserved for, you know, the greats in the game. The greats in the game, there's no true way to defend, you know, Peyton Manning in his prime. There's no true way to defend, you know, the best quarterbacks in the game. You just have to try to throw as much at them as possible, have them digest as much information as possible, and have to almost think too much. You know what I mean? Force them to have to go to their second, third progression, third read, and, you know, force them into making a mistake. And that's really hard to do against elite quarterbacks because they constantly adapt and evolve. Patrick Mahomes is doing that in his second year as a starter. It's freaky. But I said that, you know, that offense for Kansas City, I described it as a West Coast air raid. I got to add something else to that. And I think this is because Andy Reid is such a genius. You know, Andy Reid has been a student of football for a long time. Like, he has basically decided to study the most important and the most impactful passing offenses in NFL history and almost combine all of them into one offensive scheme. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. Because it's strange. I would add the one term to the West Coast air raid would be the West Coast Coryell air raid. And the Air Coryell offense at one point in the NFL was considered to be as popular and as impactful as the West Coast offense, Bill Walsh's offense. Don Coryell was expanded on, like, Sid Gilman's philosophy, and with San Diego, they had it cooking. All right, those were the two most prominent offensive philosophies: the West Coast offense and the Air Coryell offense. I think they called it at the time. Now, when the St. Louis Rams won the Super Bowl with the greatest show on turf, you know, a lot of people were like, "Oh man, look at that! It's amazing! It's a West Coast offense." It actually wasn't. It was a Coryell offense. The difference between the West Coast offense and the Air Coryell offense was that the Air Coryell offense, it was based on the emphasis on the vertical passing game. They wanted to go deep downfield as much as possible. Right? Because they wanted to put the fear of the deep ball into the mind and the subconscious of the defensive backs. And I've always said, if I was a coach, I'd throw deep balls to start off every game and every quarter. Because even if I don't connect on them, I guarantee you that DB, it's going to open up the curl route. It's going to open up the six route, the crossing route, because that DB is going to back up a little bit. Every time you throw a nine route, a deep route on a DB, he backs up a little bit. Even if you don't catch it, he does. Unless he's Champ Bailey or Charles Woodson. Most guys, it makes you a little bit leery. It just puts that thought in the back of your head, I can't give up that deep ball, because that's the one unforgivable sin as a defensive back. Don't give up the deep ball. You can give up a first down. You can give up a catch, a reception. That's all good. We can recover from that. We can recover from a touchdown off a 70-yard bomb. All right? So the Coryell offense almost used that psychology. Let's place their biggest fear, all right, at the forefront. So they used a lot of vertical passing game. Greatest Show on Turf was more of an Air Coryell offense, vertical passing game. Yes, and of course you had Marshall Faulk, and you know what I mean? And it was an impressive show, no question. But the West Coast offense, of course, is the one that ended up being popularized. And, you know, Don Coryell never won a Super Bowl. He's not in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, the Coryell offense, or at least the name, the brand, died off. But people still use the Coryell offense to this day. I mean, the Coryell offense, there were a lot of strides made, a lot of different adaptations, right? Evolutions of the game from the Coryell offense. The single back formation, what he called the option routes at the time. Nobody was using option routes. He used option routes, flood routes. The route tree, now we know as, you know, the numbered route tree, 1, 2, 3. I say the six route, which is an in cut. It's like 10 yards in an in. You know what I mean? What my boy Shano, actually, that was his favorite route, was the six route as a wide receiver. But I digress. A lot of things, motions and shifts. The Air Coryell offense used motions and shifts more than any other offense at the time. And my boy Shano, who's from that West Coast coaching tree, because his dad, Shanahan, was under... You know, he was under Seifert as the offensive coordinator, and Seifert, of course, is directly from the Walsh coaching tree. nobody uses more pre-snap motion shifts than my boy Shanno and the 49ers. Nobody uses more. So even he still, everybody does. They use a ton of principles from the Air Coryell offense. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I know for a fact that Andy Reid adopted the, you know, the air raid principles. We know that because when he was salivating, lusting over Patrick Mahomes, he had meetings with Cliff Kingsbury, asking Cliff Kingsbury, you know, about the air raid, how best to transition Patrick Mahomes to the NFL. And a lot of those were air raid principles, which he's using right now with Arizona. And you start looking at the offense. Of course, it's West Coast because Andy Reid's a West Coast offense guy. So you got the West Coast offense in there. You got the air raid in there. But nobody in the last 2 years has thrown more deep balls and actually been more effective at throwing the deep ball than the Kansas City Chiefs in the last 2 years since Patrick Mahomes has been the starter. They love to throw it deep. And why? They got Cheetah on the outside. So well, you got Tyreek Hill on the outside and you got Sammy Watkins and you do have that kind of speed. You got the fastest receiving core in the NFL. You know, when you have that and then Mecole Hardman, yeah, you want to throw it deep. So I would add one more term to the West Coast Coryell offense. It's the West Coast Coryell air raid, I should say. That's what Andy Reid is running, if I have to describe it. It's the best way to do it. There's a great quote from Malcolm Gladwell about in one of his books, and he's talking about Steve Jobs. He calls people like Steve Jobs a tweaker. He says, Steve Jobs is a tweaker. He didn't necessarily invent a ton of things, but you know what I mean? He tweaked a lot of different things to make it more palatable to the masses, right? And Andy Reid's not really inventing different things. He's just taking different concepts. You know the first one to start using the pistol formation in the NFL? Andy Reid. Andy Reid started using the pistol way back when Jamaal Charles was his running back. And I remember when it happened because Jamaal Charles, like 2013, I believe it was, and go and look after that. Jamaal Charles, I think, has his best years right after that. In 2013, Andy Reid hires Nevada coach Chris Ault, a former Nevada coach Chris Ault, who was the innovator of the pistol. All right? And he hired him as a consultant to change their offense with the Kansas City Chiefs. And Alex Smith started running the pistol. But then right after that, Colin Kaepernick, remember that guy? All right, the San Francisco 49ers, they started using a ton of the pistol. The first one to use the pistol, arguably, or to popularize it, I should say, in the NFL was actually Andy Reid. And now you see the Baltimore Ravens using a ton of the pistol, right? That's how they have been able to separate themselves in their running game. It's one of their cheat codes they use a ton of. And Andy Reid's always been one of those guys. He's a great tweaker. But he's been obsessed with the college game forever. Andy Reid actually is one of the first coaches to admit the college game is ahead or has been ahead of the pro game for years. He's one of the only ones to throw it out there. In an article from The Ringer, Andy Reid says that the college game is 5 years ahead of the pro game. And he said that 5 years ago, that spread offenses had thoroughly dominated the college game, would finally dominate the NFL. And then, of course, he said that in 2000. He said that in 2013. So he said that in 2013. He was saying it's 5 years ahead. And now look at all the things that he's combining. So Andy Reid, man, and it's hard to find a comparison for Andy Reid. He is one of the winningest coaches in the history of the NFL, but he just hadn't run the big one. But, man, his influence on the league, just being a guy that's he's just sampling, right? Remember I said yesterday that James Brown, the reason James Brown changed music forever because James Brown's the most sampled artist on the planet, Earth. No artist in the history of the world has been sampled more than James Brown. So, you know what I mean? Like, think about that. Think about all the great artists there have been. Nobody's music has been used more to almost reinvent different genres of music than James Brown. And in a sense, you know, Andy Reid, he is sampling a lot of different concepts, but it's just brilliant the way he's combined them all together, and he's got the perfect quarterback now to do it. Even when he brought in Michael Vick, And, you know, Joe Banner tells this story that when Andy Reid brought in Michael Vick in 2009, he wanted to run the spread offense then. He wanted to bring up the, you know, the college concepts even way back then, and he ended up being a little before his time, and he didn't know if Vick was ready, but Vick Hale still had a great season, ended up being an MVP candidate. But even back then, he says, yeah, the reason he brought in Vick, he visualized almost what you see now. You know what I mean? A quarterback that can beat you in a million different ways. And Andy Reid's always wanted to, you know, have a quarterback that can beat you with his legs, right? Even, you know, Alex Smith and, you know, Vince Young he brought in at one time. Of course, the Michael Vick. He knew that in the end, that's the ultimate weapon at quarterback. That when the defense has everything figured out, okay, I'll scramble for eight. Damn. You know what I mean? It's back-breaking when Mahomes does that. Got everything covered up. First time you had a great call all day on third down, this dude decides, I'm just going to run for it. So Andy Reid already knew it. And so that's what I respect about Andy Reid, is that over the course of time, this is what Bill Belichick actually said about Andy Reid. Over the course of time, he's been able to modify some of the traditional West Coast principles from Coach Brown to Holmgren and so forth to fit his personnel, to fit new scheme and ideas that he's incorporated. He said, so West Coast offense is still built around speed, space, and balance, catch and run plays, yards after catch, balance between running game and the passing game, and getting the ball to skilled players so they can make yards with it. So in the modern age of the NFL, and even the Ravens have done this too, combining a lot of cheat codes and concepts I talk about, and Shanahan has done a great job with it. I don't think anybody's done a better job than Andy Reid. The only thing that's hurt, that's holding Andy Reid back from becoming, you know, really, I would say, among the elite head coaches that keep people from dropping the elite term with him, is that he doesn't have a Super Bowl.
Is the scale? Oh, that he doesn't have a Super Bowl.
Okay. Well, it depends on your definition of elite.
Yeah, yeah,
he could be elite there, too.
He's an elite eater.
He's an elite eater, man. And hey, you know what? Nobody's going to talk about his diet or his size if he wins the Super Bowl. All those jokes will be done.
That's true.
All right, we'll come back. We'll get into what makes the running game for the 49ers so special. Pop culture comparisons for Andy Reid, maybe for my man Shano. We'll get into that on the other side with the Super Bowl coming up. And then you got the Oscars on the other side of that. So maybe a Hollywood comparison for Andy Reid and a hip-hop comparison for Andy Reid. All of those and more right here on the Rodcast. This is the Horn 104.9 AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. You can always hit us up on the Specs Text Line, 512-337-3776. You also can hit me up via Twitter, at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. That's also on the gram. And my man BK is at Brad Kellner in the Twitterverse. We'll hit the Specs Text Line here in just a second. We're just talking about Andy Reid, and I had a... Someone told me that I should do more of my pop culture comparisons because even with Kobe, when Kobe passed away, because I was reading an article on Rolling Stone from... And it was the one of the members of Red Hot Chili Peppers, apparently was like a big Kobe fan, had been to every Kobe game, lived out in L.A. And when he talked about Kobe, he said he compared him to Coltrane and compared him to, you know, like Miles Davis and like some of the other great jazz musicians who kind of changed the arc of their genre, right? And because they were so influential. And he compared, you know, Kobe to one of those characters in pop culture. And it got me to thinking, musically, who do I compare Kobe to? My comparison randomly was Tupac. And he was like, Tupac, that's crazy. Well, Tupac was very confrontational. All right. He didn't get along with everybody. And that was part of it, right? Him and Tupac and Biggie were friends initially. They were friends. And then it got to the point where both of them ended up getting killed over beef they had with one another. And Biggie, to this day, Biggie was like, I have no idea what the beef was about. Biggie says, I don't know what Tupac is talking about. And now, Biggie could be lying, making all that up. But Tupac thought that Biggie was involved with him getting shot. No, actually, Tupac thought that Biggie knew the people who shot him. And then he was covering up for him. Because Biggie knew everybody. Like, Biggie knew everybody. Biggie called himself the king. He was king of New York. And Biggie claimed to know everybody. He's like, you know everybody. You know those guys. Tell me who they are. And Biggie's like, I don't know who they are. I have no idea. Now, they were actually at the same studio when Tupac was shot at the studio. No, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. That may be why Tupac was like, well, I know you know those dudes. They were in the studio where we all were hanging out. So anyway, my point, I digress. But he was confrontational. Kobe was confrontational. Kobe called himself an a-hole. Kobe said, I made teammates cry. He made teammates cry. Hell, him and Shaq didn't get along for years after they divorced and parted ways. After Kobe got him kicked off the Lakers. Because Kobe felt he didn't work hard enough.
Yeah.
Got tired of Shaq's, you know.
Let's talk about confrontational. Remember when Kobe gave the Lakers new pairs of Kobe's a couple of years ago, new pairs of Kobe shoes, and they went out and lost, and he took them all back?
He took them all.
That's Kobe right there.
That is an awesome story.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's another great Kobe story. I got to make sure. Hold on, make sure I get it right. Because if I get the story wrong, then I'll get myself in trouble. Okay, do you remember, man, who is this? It's a former teammate of Kobe's, and I can't remember his name. Oh, I got to make sure I get it. I got to make sure I get it right. Okay, I'll get it right here in a second because I don't want to get it wrong. But Kobe once told one of his teammates that you go to the basket like a light-skinned dude. You need to go to the basket like a dark-skinned dude. What was his name? You looked that up?
Yeah.
Who was it? Who was it? I can't remember his name.
Could it have been Jordan Clarkson?
I think you're right. Yes.
Yeah.
No, this is recent.
This is more recent, Kobe.
Literally, Kobe told him that, like, hey, man. You know what I mean? These days, usually that would be considered. Right now, I want to say, oh, man, that was a situation just yesterday in the NBA where a player made a comment. Was it? Oh, I'm gonna make sure I get the name right.
That was Marcus Morris.
Marcus Morris, right?
Woman-like thing.
And he said, you got feminine, like you basically your female tendencies. Was the term that he used?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that he thought one of the the guys that he was playing up against, Marcus Morris, said he played with female tendencies. Who was he talking about? Do we remember?
Jay Crowder.
Okay. Thank you very much, BK. Yeah. Anyway, my point being, getting back to the Tupac Kobe comparison, they were both kind of a-holes in their own right, very confrontational. But sometimes leadership has to be confrontational. It's very dark, but both of them were accused of sexual assault. Tupac went to jail for it. Mm-hmm. Throw it out there, too. And work ethic. Tupac notoriously stayed in the studio all night, stayed up smoking cigarettes and blunts and eating chicken wings. And that's all he did, was stay in the studio. That's why he has 6 albums that came out after he died. He had so much. He still got stuff out there we haven't heard. Because he was just cutting albums with anybody in any studio he found. That's all he did all day. And Kobe, if Kobe found the gym and he couldn't get the lights to come on, Kobe would shoot around in the dark. Like, that was Kobe. Right? Shaq says once he walked in on Kobe practicing without a basketball, sweating, just grunting, you know, going crazy. Like he's that maniacal. You know what I mean? That was part of his competitive sickness. By any means necessary, get the advantage. So, yeah, I mean, that's so I made that comparison. And obviously, they were both tragically died before their time.
Yeah.
That's also part of it.
I thought it was a great comparison.
Yeah.
That's as good as you're going to get if you're comparing two guys in completely different industries like
that. Yeah. So here's my Andy Reid one. You guys let me know if I'm off about the Andy Reid one. Because I'll give you a comparison that you can actually watch at the Oscars next week or next weekend. I think he's Brad Pitt.
They look the same.
Andy Reid is Brad Pitt. And I know, just stay with me here. Brad Pitt's been acting for how long? And Brad Pitt's 56 years old. Realize that? Brad Pitt's been acting for like almost like 30 years, something close to it. He's old as hell.
It looks like he's 26.
And he's up, they say black don't crack. Hell, Brad don't crack. Well, hey, you
might. I hope that happens to me, shoot.
But no, man, he's been around forever, and he's always been in great movies, right? Brad Pitt doesn't have a lot of bad. Like I'm sure he's got some bad movies. Name me the bad Brad Pitt movie. He's got some that are shaky, but it's hard to find a bad Brad Pitt movie. You know what I mean? It's hard to find a bad Andy Reid season. It's hard. I mean, Andy Reid's been pretty damn. I mean, he's been pretty consistent, and he's had his highs. Right? He's been to a Super Bowl. He's been to numerous NFC title games. Brad Pitt's been nominated for 4 Oscars, hadn't won one. He's never reached the mountaintop. Have you ever said to yourself that Brad Pitt's the best actor in Hollywood? Never. Is he good? Hell yeah. Is he A-list? Hell yeah. Is he the best? Nah, not the best. Has Andy Reid ever been the best coach in football? Now, most of that's Belichick. Nope. Never been the best. But we love him. We think he's great. But he's never been the best. And the reason is, because part of it is because he hasn't won the Oscar. But, I mean, that's a different committee, different thing. But if I'm giving a Hollywood comparison, my Hollywood comparison is he's Brad Pitt. a guy that's been around forever, extremely accomplished, everybody loves him, and yet hasn't ever been considered the best coach or the best actor in Hollywood, and still has yet to solidify that with the accolade, the ultimate accolade, which for an actor is the Oscar, and for Andy Reid is the Super Bowl. Is that Hollywood comparison? Bad, good? What do you think, BK?
I'm just doing a Google search for Andy Reid, Jennifer Aniston to see if I see anything going on there.
I don't know. Here's my hip-hop comparison for Andy Reid. He's Nas. Or you know what? I'll give you two of them. He's Nas or Snoop Dogg. And it sounds strange. Snoop Dogg's been nominated for 17 Grammys. Never won one. Always good. Everybody loves Snoop Dogg. Right? Everybody loves him. Nobody thinks Andy Reid's a bad coach. Nobody's hating on Snoop Dogg. But Snoop Dogg's never accomplished the ultimate goal, which is to win a Grammy. And I don't know if I've ever considered Snoop Dogg to be the best rapper in the game. Entertaining, hell yeah. But if I ever said, oh, no, Snoop Dogg is the best. Snoop Dogg is the GOAT. I've never heard anybody make that argument about Snoop Dogg. They love Snoop Dogg. Nobody said he's the GOAT. He's going to be up there when you look at all-time great rappers. He'll probably end up somewhere up there in the upper echelon. But, Nas the same way. I never considered Nas to be the best hip-hop artist or the top rapper in the game. And I know Nas is awesome. 8 consecutive platinum albums, multi-platinum, never won a Grammy, 13 nominations. You know what I mean? Like that's – now, Andy Reid obviously can change that comparison this weekend when he wins the Super Bowl. Then I got to come up with a whole new different pop culture comparison. That's
might,
how –
might ruin your bit here.
That's why it only applies this weekend because Brad Pitt – that is – Brad Pitt's nominated for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He could win one.
Yeah.
And then change the narrative a little bit about himself. Remember Leo did that. Remember Leonardo DiCaprio? For a while, I would have made Leonardo DiCaprio comparisons to Andy Reid. Top of his game. Everybody loved him. Awesome. Everybody thought he was unbelievable. Still had not accomplished the ultimate goal, which is to win an Oscar. But he did. He won for The Departed. He should have won for The Departed, but he won for the one when he's in a grizzly bear. And I got that. My CTE is kicking in today.
Oh, man.
It's not good.
Let me check. You know, bad
The Revenant. The
movies.
Revenant.
There you go.
The Revenant. Thank you.
Is it good? Never saw it. Good movie.
You never seen The Revenant?
No, of course not.
You're not a Leo fan?
I am a Leo fan. I haven't seen all of his movies.
You need to have a list of actors, and you go to anything that those actors, like Tom Hanks. If Tom Hanks comes up with something, I'm going. Because Tom Hanks don't make bad movies.
Yeah.
All right. Brad Pitt may be in that category. But I would say Christian Bale's like in there. Now, there are some people in there in that category. And Leo is definitely in there. Leonardo DiCaprio makes a movie, you got to go. And when I heard Brad Pitt and Leo were making a movie together with, you know what I mean? I had to go. I was like, no, I'm going to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't go to the movies for a lot of movies. I'm going for that one. And I like Brad Pitt's performance. Also, if you want to make another one that Andy Reid could be, I don't think he's this guy, but he could be. He could be Joaquin Phoenix from a different perspective. Joaquin Phoenix has been nominated for 4 Oscars, hadn't won one. He's up for the Joker. He should win it because his performance. Have you seen The Joker?
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
have you seen Heath Ledger's Joker in The Dark Knight?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So you got to have comparisons, but, I mean, I agree. That's 1A and 1B. It's unbelievable. And posthumously, I think Heath Ledger was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for his role. But Joaquin Phoenix has always been obtuse, always been outside the box, like Andy Reid. Right, Andy Reid's a little outside the box, a little obtuse, bringing in a Michael Vick. I'm going to bring in a Vince Young. I'm going to trade up for a Patrick Mahomes when everybody else thinks he's a guy that should be drafted later in the draft. Even though I got an Alex Smith, he's pretty good, but I want to do better. He's unorthodox. I think Joaquin Phoenix is, to say the least, unorthodox. And he's got a chance to kind of to change the narrative about himself this weekend. Well, not 2 weekends from now. If he wins that Oscar for Best Actor, which I think he will, but I haven't looked at all the nominees yet. But that, to me, that's my Andy Reid comparison, is that he just, you know, I mean, he's right there with those greats we love who just hasn't been able to accomplish the ultimate goal. You could also say he's Katy Perry, who's been nominated 13 times. It's never won a Grammy.
How about that?
Yeah. And that's strange, you would think. But all of her contemporaries, they've been killing it. The Taylor Swifts and the Beyoncés, they mash it. And she's like, Katy Perry can't win it. She's Andy Reid.
I keep putting too much emphasis on appearance here.
You do. You can't. The comparison is not about not at all. It's about, it's well out there, the circumstance. Yeah, I apologize for that. All right, I've always said on this show that there are certain things that are more of a burden than a benefit on society, and that they just need to go away. All right, you just need to get rid of them. They need to go away. Some people had this belief about the fullback position. In the NFL. Only half the NFL teams even have a fullback on the roster. The Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl a couple years ago. No fullback on the roster at all. Not even paying one. Not worth it to them. There are plenty of ways to skin a cat. But the 49ers, one of the keys to their running game, and honestly, it may be the key to their running game, is the fullback. So there's an old school feel to what the 49ers do, and I'll tell you why it may be the key to the Super Bowl coming up. We'll get into that on the other side. There's also your text on the Specs text line, and we'll continue to get into some other topics. Dusty Baker, officially, I think, I don't know if it's official. I don't know if the Astros have done it, but all the reports are, even from Cron.com, that Dusty Baker is the new manager of the Houston Astros. I don't know if they've had the introductory press conference yet, but we'll get into that subject a little bit too, because I think there are Astros fans that are torn on this topic. Some think it's a wise decision to hire the oldest manager in Major League Baseball after one of the biggest scandals in the history of Major League Baseball. And some people think that it's a bad idea. Good idea, bad idea. People are torn. So we'll get into that conversation on the other side. All that and more right here on the broadcast. This is The Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Texter here says, Rod, I think Andy Reid is closer to Chris Farley than Brad Pitt. Great comic, not an all-time great, and both would be believable if they told you they lived in a van down by the river. It's damn good. I like that. It's pretty good. Another texter says, Dusty Baker contract is for 1 year. Yeah, I think it's understood that obviously he's 70. So, that's not a long-term investment there. He's 70. He's old, all right? But they know this is going to be a really rocky season for them after the sign-stealing scandal. You know, Dusty Baker as a player and a manager has probably seen about as much as anybody in baseball, like currently in baseball, in terms of his experience and wisdom. There's nothing that really that will surprise him, even with the Barry Bonds stuff. I mean, he's dealt with scandal before. And some people say, why would you bring in a guy who's been around a scandal to do the reinvention after a scandal and the damage control? Well, I think they want somebody to be able to guide the locker room. You know what I mean? Just be able to give the guys good advice, give the wisdom, I think, is what they want. Wisdom and experience. That's what Dusty Baker's all about. They know they're not looking for him to give them a vision for the future of the Astros. Not going to happen. Right, they want him for 1 year. This year, it will have we'll have most of the blowback and the negativity from the sign-stealing scandal. And then after this year, most people will move on to something else. There'll be another scandal. People move on. I mean, elections. So much stuff happens. People will forget about the Astros stealing signs. There'll be a few baseball traditions that'll stick to it, and they'll be throwing Oscar the Grouch dolls on the field and all that, and that's really cute. But for the most part, this will be the season that everybody brings it up. This will be the season that will be hell for the Astros on the road. After that, dude, we'll move on to something. There'll be some other thing to worry about, I assure you.
Think so?
Yes!
Yeah.
Dude, we got the attention span of a goldfish. You see, yeah. Did we go to stick on the science in the scandal? President Trump will do something crazy? Something will happen? Coronavirus. I don't know, man.
I don't disagree with that. Dude, I just know that sports fans.
The Kobe Bryant thing. We couldn't even talk about anything else for 72 hours. Super Bowl. Dude, we'll move on to something else.
Right.
Trust me.
Right.
It'll last throughout this season, but after that, it'll die out. There's no way it's going to stick around.
Yeah.
No,
I would guess the teams that the Astros beat in their World Series runs, it'll stay with them
a little bit
longer.
But for the most part, people are free. After this season, something else will come up, man. I assure you.
Yeah.
The Roger Goodell will screw up something, or we'll focus on something else. But I do. I think it's all about the Astros just making sure they have somebody who can guide the ship, because it's gonna be hard, man. It's gonna be rocky. I agree, because they're now villains. So are you going to tell them to embrace their villainy? You know, you'll go Mamba mentality on this whole thing, or are you going to go, listen, guys, be contrite, be humble. You actually deserve this, but still be the best version of yourself through all this. You know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, this was a guy that played on the team with Hank Aaron when he broke the home run record. So he's seen, you talk about, you know, negative fan reaction and how to deal with it. I think he's got some experience. You know what I mean? Like, I think he was on deck, actually, when he broke the record. If I'm not mistaken, I think Dusty Baker was literally on deck at the time. You need to check my facts on that. Anyway, so I think that's what it's all about. And you know what? I like the move. I like the move. I do. 1 year, we all know what he is. And you know what? If you're Dusty Baker, you got a talented team. Why not go change your narrative and go win the whole damn thing? You know what I mean? You got 1 year. You got 1 year. It feels like I'm Eminem on that song. So that's all that beat you be playing. Dun, dun, dun. You got one chance. All right, Dusty Baker. Everybody says, Dusty Baker's an underachiever, man. He's an average manager. Why not now go win the whole damn thing? You got talent to do it. I mean, it ain't like you got a scrub roster.
No. You're one of the best teams in the league.
And you got a chip on your shoulder now. You got a reason to be the underdogs. You against the world. You better use it. If anybody can use that, I think Dusty will be able to do it. In terms of managing the roster and all that, I don't know if Dusty can maximize it. I got to do some more research on it to find out if he can maximize that roster and what his tendencies are. But I like the move on the surface, I like the move. Listener 6000 says, Rod B, I'll give you a Star Wars reference. Andy Reid is Jabba the Hutt in Star Wars. Okay. Ha, ha, ha. Yes. Andy Reid is overweight. I get it. All right. He's still a brilliant play caller. Let's just focus on what he's good at. Someone says, Andy Reid is Susan Lucci, the actress from All My Children. I don't watch soap, so I don't get it. I don't watch, I've never been into the soaps. I apologize. When I was home, either unemployed, you know, or had time, I would watch trash TV like the Maury Povich show or the Jerry Springer
don't
show.
Don't call that trash TV. That's as good as it gets.
Dude, that is great trash, though.
I used to come home from school every day and watch Maury.
Oh, isn't it awesome?
Senior year of high school, I had early release. I used to go home, had lunch with my moms, and then we watched Maury Povich together, man. Good times.
Hey, you are not the father. Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh, man. I'm with you. I love me some old trashy stuff.
It's great.
Someone says, Rod B, how about some more stripper analogies? All right. You want more stripper analogies? I can work that out too. A texter says, Ad Astra was terrible, Rod B. Bad Brad Pitt movie. I watched Ad Astra. Wasn't bad, just slow. This is the same thing with the Super Bowl last year. Everybody's like, bad Super Bowl. No. Not bad. Slow. And y'all's attention span is right now that of a goldfish, like 9 seconds. Just slow. You like ultimate, you know, satisfaction and, you know, immediate satisfaction. That wasn't that Super Bowl. It took a while for that Super Bowl to pay off. There was a lot of foreplay early on. You know what I mean? That's why I loved that Super Bowl. It just teased me the whole time.
Too much.
And then in the end, I was like, oh, that was unbelievable. Yeah. Wow me in the end, baby. That was a great Super Bowl. Y'all like, oh, it was bad. I was like, it was bad. It was a great defensive game. You guys thought it was bad. You thought Ad Astra was bad. Nope, you just don't like slow movies. Someone says, tell me how my arse tastes, Shaq rap. That's also a great rap back in the day. Someone says, most sampled, is George Clinton up there? George Clinton is up there. I don't know. I know that James Brown is the most sampled. I read that in Rolling Stone magazine, that he was the most sampled artist in the history of music. And it's because of hip-hop, actually. He's a godfather of soul, funk, and hip-hop, basically. You want to look at it. Another texter here says, each Super Bowl team should be able to pick up the best 5 players from their conference. That would be awesome. That would be awesome, actually. I didn't even think about that. That would be pretty cool. Another texter here says, Capital Metro Light Rail says, petty cab driver, keep high-fiving other drivers and making up their names like you know when. I have no idea what this means.
Oh, this is what we...
this is you guys.
We got into it.
What were y'all talking about? About petty cabs.
I'm in a little bit of a position of power. With the lady that I met on 6th Street on Saturday.
Good for you.
She doesn't know what I do. So I was asking the people to come up with, like, alter egos or fake jobs that I could have.
Why? Okay. Why doesn't she know what you do? Did she ask you what you did?
It's Sixth Street, man.
It never came up in conversation?
It was a short conversation.
Did you get a number
or
something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She texted me asking me that.
Okay. Well, that's good then. What have I always said? Well, the first three questions when you meet a woman and you're into her, and maybe it's the same thing when you meet a man. You know what I mean? I don't know. Now there's anything wrong with that. My point being is always, what do you do? They're going to want to know what you do for a living. And so she was so wasted, she didn't ask you. But the first thing she texted you was, oh, I told my girlfriends about this cute guy I met. What does he do, girl? I don't know. Texted you. What do you do?
Yeah.
And now you got to find. Now you got to just tell her what you do. You have a cool job, dude.
Yeah, but
you have a radio show.
I know.
Radio is still cool.
I got to entertain myself, though. I got to come up with something different.
No, don't do
Doing
it.
Doing the same thing over and over gets boring. I got to spice it up a little bit.
All right, the single days. All right, we'll come right back. That and more right here on the Rodcast. This is the Horn 104.9 AM 1260.